Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have brought to the program David Banner. He is the author of the new book, Frame Shifting, A Path to Wholeness, which is out now on Loving Healing Press. So David Banner is an enthusiastic author, mentor, and educator. He has chosen a life that is always open to new experiences, both professionally and spiritually. His varied work life has included jobs with NASA, the military, entrepreneurship, and in education. During that time, he has authored 6 books and countless articles about transformational leadership, ethics, and integrity in business, and other related topics. Among his books is Designing Effective Organizations, which takes a spiritual look at business management. And recently, David retired as a university professor, and he just completed his new book, Frame Shifting, which he is here to talk about today. And you can find out more about David through his website, davidkbanner.com. So thank you so much for joining us today, David.
Well, you're welcome, Juanita. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, great. So congratulations. So this is your 6th book or your 7th book?
This is the 7th.
Oh, gosh. You've been busy.
I've been busy, but this is the first one that I've ever written that really had my heart in it. The other ones were for getting promoted and tenured and various other things as a university professor, so they were sort of obligatory. One of them, the Designing Effective Organizations, was my passion, but this one is even more closer to my heart.
Well, you put a lot of your own personal journey into this book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So tell us first off, okay, this book really is kind of a how-to for improving one's life through shifting beliefs and perceptions. So take us back a little bit to how you started on this path and how your own experiences basically led you to writing Frame Shifting.
Ooh, good question, Juanita. Well, earlier in my life, I was raised as an Episcopal in Texas. I had a really interesting upbringing. My dad was an agnostic, and my mom sort of felt like we needed some kind of religious education, and her uncle was an Episcopal priest, so we ended up in that church. And through a series of adventures, I realized that no organized religion that I had discovered had what I would call the truth. They had a lot of dogma, a lot of belief systems, a lot of theory, but I didn't feel satisfied in any of them, and I went through a period I call my religious dilettante experience, where I went to virtually every organized religion on the planet, all the way from fundamentalist Pentecostal to Baha'i. So I checked them all out, and I just didn't find anything satisfying until 1970, when I read Ram Dass's Be Here Now, which was, you know, a very seminal spiritual book of the time, and it just blew me away. I went, whoa, this sounds right. So I started with that experience. That was my very first frame-shifting experience that I could identify that really caused me to look at myself differently and look at life differently. And that is basically the theme of the book, that there are these experiences that we encounter that cause us to see ourselves and our identity as being larger than it was before, and also we have an increased sense of aliveness and connection with all of life through these experiences. And that's why I wrote the book, because I started looking back at my life and realizing, gee, I've had a number of these experiences. And so I just wanted to communicate what I had learned about that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's basically what frame shifting is. It's altering the perception, something that you do or something that happens, and it alters your perception. Have you heard of this word frame shifting, or did you coin that yourself?
I made it up, or
that's
it
great.
Made me up.
Yeah.
This was what was so interesting about this whole process, Juanita, because once I had written Designing Effective Organizations in 1995, every year I went inside myself, which is where I go for answers, and I said, is there another book? And silence would be there. So I said, well, I guess not. And so every year since then, I've looked to see if I needed to write another book. And the sense was, no, you're fine. Just chill. So about a year and a half ago, I was awakened at 4 in the morning with this startling insight that I needed to write a book. And pretty soon the book just started flowing through me. So I picked up a pen and a sheet of paper. And by the time the sun came up, I had outlined the whole book. And I hesitate to say it was a channeled experience. I don't think it was. I think it was just my higher awareness being allowed to come through. And joyfully, I started writing it. And in 6 weeks, I had the whole thing written. And then the whole journey's been magical. I mean, my publisher was given to me by a friend. Didn't even have to look for a publisher. I've got a woman who's handling my overseas sales by another friend said, oh, I've got a friend that can help you with that. And it's just been very magical and really pretty much effortless on my part, other than just sort of staying in the flow of it and paying attention.
And
so,
do you think that this book was basically a manifestation of you doing this work that you talk about in this book?
Yeah, I think it was, because many of your listeners will be familiar with Eckhart Tolle. You know, he just did this thing with Oprah, and there's another woman named Byron Katie who wrote a book called Loving What Is. And I was just thinking about both of those two people because they both had experiences of enlightenment, which is what I'm talking about in the book, but they had them through really desperation. I mean, if you know Tolle's story, he was just miserable. His ego was driving him crazy. The guy was just, just bottoming out, you know, and thinking about committing suicide. Mm-hmm. And then he had this thought. He said, well, you know, I can't stand myself anymore. And then he paused for a minute and said, wait a second. If I can't stand myself, there must be two of me.
Yeah, right.
The one that can't stand myself and the one that, you know, is miserable.
Mm, yeah.
So one is an observer, and he thought, oh, gosh, well, maybe one of those two is not real. And then he suddenly realized that there's this false identity we call the ego. And that's actually the first part of my book where I talk about what the ego is and how it's not bad or wrong. It's just limiting. It causes us to perceive a world that's very narrow, and it has as its premise that we are separate from everything, including each other.
The illusion of separateness we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's what it is. And so these frame-shifting experiences cause us to loosen our grip on, or loosen the ego's grip on us, I should say, and we begin to see that actually who we are is connected to all life everywhere in the cosmos. And so it's frame shifting is really an experience of expanding your identity, who you think you are, in terms of your emotional awareness, your mental awareness, and your physical awareness. And that's the way I have it broken down in the book, is experiences I've had that have expanded my awareness in those three categories.
So those are the tools, the mind, body, and emotional tools that
exactly.
you talk about? Okay.
Yeah. And Tolle and Byron Katie both had experiences of what you could call instant enlightenment because they were so miserable that the ego was just not able to hang on, and they moved into a, you could call a trans-ego kind of state. Well, what I'm talking about, and actually Tolle talks about this too, is you don't have to get that miserable to actually move towards a state of wholeness. And so my book is different than his in that I talk about things you can do to move you toward the state he realized, although he got to that state, you might say, instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what I'm talking about are things that every person can do and experiences you can avail yourself of that will move you toward that state
today.
You know, slowly but surely.
Right. Instead of having to take it down there. So I've heard you say, David, that the ego needs fear to sustain itself, and that's why most people have a underlying sort of sense of unease or anxiety that's just kind of brewing under the surface. And I find that so interesting. So tell us why we actually have an ego, and then how it has become to be in the driver's seat for so many people.
Right. That's a great question, Juanita. My sense of it is that in the sort of legendary fall from grace that is described in the Bible and other spiritual texts, and actually there's a great book if your listeners want to read this. It's a 1989 book by Richard Heinberg. It's called Memories and Visions of Paradise. And Heinberg's a friend of mine, and he did some research, and around the world there are all these myths in all cultures about a time of Eden, a time when we weren't tortured by the ego, a time when we were connected to plants, animals, all sentient life. But what apparently happened was we decided to try to run things ourselves. So the ego really is pretending to be God. And so, but in so doing, they disconnect from the life force or the God force and create a separate identity that wants to run things by itself. And that's why we're so fearful, is because deep inside ourselves, we know that we're not capable of running the universe. Mm-hmm. Our little egos can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so there's this pervasive sense of fear that everybody has, if they're honest, because we're out of touch with the pulsations of the cosmos, the rhythms of the universe. We just aren't connected to it. And it's gotten worse in Western culture with our technological orientation and our clock orientation, which are not natural rhythms. And, you know, we sit in front of computers all day and so forth. And these things move us further away from the natural pulsations of the cosmos. That's why it's so healing for us to go into the country and just walk in the woods. Is because, oh, yeah, there's this feeling of, oh, everything's okay. You know, things are working out just fine. There's nothing wrong there. But you get back into your workaday world, and there are all these so-called problems that need to be fixed. And that's all the ego, because the ego needs problems to survive. That's a very central point that I make in the book. If the ego doesn't have a problem, it doesn't have anything to resist. And when you're not resisting anything, when you're just loving the way your life is now without, you know, complaining, whining, groaning, bitching, etc., then the ego has nothing to stick to, and it weakens it.
Mm.
Yeah. So one of the ways you can shift your frame is what Byron Katie talks about, loving what is. And that is just whatever shows up in your life is basically what you attracted into your life through your thinking, your feeling realm. And so instead of blaming somebody else for what showed up, you can just take responsibility for it and, as Tolle would say, take action, do something.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the first thing you have to do is not complain, because when you complain, that's just the ego strengthening itself.
So it really is about harder. It really is about taking responsibility.
100% responsibility, yep, that's the ego.
And knowing that it is a choice.
It is always a choice, yeah.
I think that's such a fascinating concept, and maybe that responsibility may be too much for us at certain times in our life to take, and maybe that's why more people aren't on this path quite yet. I don't know.
No, I think it's a good insight. I'll tell you a funny story from my university teaching days. I was talking about 100% personal responsibility in a class one day, and this one student just shot out of his chair, and he said, "Dr. Banner," he said, I like blaming other people. It makes me feel better. I understand. I understand. It does momentarily make you feel better because it takes the pressure off of you. I mean, the idea that I'm responsible for my world is a pretty weighty concept.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can blame somebody else, you go, "Whew, oh, boy, that felt good."
Yeah.
But ultimately, it doesn't do you any good, because the truth is that you are responsible for your life, and you're the one that's creating it by your particular belief systems, attitudes, values. And, you know, I have a good friend that says, you know, your experience of life is caused by your belief system. But what is actually happening in life is true. So if we could get to what is really going on rather than the way we've pictured it through our ego and our belief systems, then we would have a much better opportunity for awakening.
Can you give us an example of how you can have a limiting belief, go through a frame-shifting experience, and then have that change your perception? Do you have any you know, kind of quick example? That would be great.
Absolutely, I do. When I was in California teaching out there, I studied Aikido. And Aikido is a self-defense martial art, which is you may be familiar with.
Mm-hmm,
it's fabulous,
yeah,
and I got a black belt in it. And one of the practices that you learn with Aikido, which was a frame-shifting experience, is you start the practice by going into what they call your one point, which is this point below your navel inside your body, and then you expand your awareness to fill your body, and then you fill the room, then you fill the city. And so your awareness is expanding in all directions, 360 degrees, down, up, north, south, east, west. And then you just keep expanding. You expand to fill the planet, and you expand to fill the solar system and the galaxy. And ultimately, just keep expanding to the outer edges of the universe. Now, this course is all done energetically. You're still in your body in the Aikido dojo. But, I mean, you experience the vastness of space with all the bodies in space. And then you come back slowly but surely through that progression back to your one point. And then you start the practice. Well, if you do this a few times, you realize that your body doesn't end with your skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I get it. You know, my body really is the universe. That's my real body. But this ego body seems to be here in this little limited physical capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And that really changed me forever. Mm-hmm. I thought, holy cow, that's amazing.
Well, how important is it going through like a spiritual awakening process like that to actually do work that incorporates the body?
Ooh, another good question. I am a student of the Enneagram,
mm-hmm.
and some of your listeners may know about that too, and I'm what's called a 7. I'm the Epicure. I like to sample everything. And so in that process of sampling everything, I've tried virtually every self-help technology on the planet.
Yeah.
And in so doing, I've come to realize that these kinds of experiences can be manufactured. You can actually choose to do things that will produce them, or they can come unbidden, like my waking at 4 a.m. and writing the book.
Mm.
So there's actually no real formula for frame shifting other than experiences that I've had that I know produce that outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So the one I just described to you produce the outcome of a larger sense of my body. Now, me being a 7 means I'm a mental type, and so there's some processes that will expand who I think I am mentally, and there's some other processes that expand who I think I am emotionally. So you can kind of, in a way, tailor your frame-shifting experiences by just seeing what's available out there.
Okay, so do you explain the Enneagram then in your book? Is that an important part of it? Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. And the Enneagram is a great, great tool for personal inquiry. It has often used, I think incorrectly, as sort of a parlor game. Oh, what's your number? That's a very, in my opinion, superficial use of the tool. Really, when like now that I know I'm a 7, I can see my strengths and I can see my limitations. And so I can be the observer self that Eckhart Tolle talks about, and I can kind of bust myself when I'm doing a sort of a dysfunctional 7 behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can do that with their type. They can learn more about their type and go, oh, yeah, that's a habitual thinking pattern that I have, and that's a habitual behavior that I have, and I don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there comes choice, like you said before. Before, you're just unconscious and running your type. And once you start watching yourself run your type, you can go, oh, I can choose not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very growthful, I think.
Definitely. Well, the Enneagram, too, it seems to me that it isn't such a far-reaching concept that even people maybe that don't have a lot of background in, you know, the kind of new age stuff, and I don't particularly like to use that word, but you know, in spiritual development, there's so many books out there, but you know, this seems to be a concept that people could on all levels really understand, and it wouldn't be too much.
I agree with you, and actually it's not new age at all.
Mm-hmm.
If you look into it, it's 2,000 years old.
Yeah, oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was brought to the U.S. by Gurdjieff at the turn of the century, and before that he got it from some Sufis in the Pamir Mountains of Central Asia. So this thing has been around a really long time. And the interesting thing about the Enneagram, it has now been researched by 19 different PhD students as to its validity, and it is way more accurate and powerful than Myers-Briggs or DISC or Colors or any of these other personality instruments. It's the most powerful personality investigation tool that I've ever run across.
Now, did you utilize this in your business work?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I used to teach leadership. I was the director of an MBA program in La Crosse, Wisconsin for 5 years. I designed courses around the Enneagram, and my MBA students just loved it because they could understand their boss better, their peers better, their subordinates better, and themselves better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extremely helpful. And I talk about this in the book, but it's really helped my marriage tremendously because I understand my wife now in a way I never did before.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm. Has she read your book? Obviously,
she has.
Mm-hmm.
She has read it, but now you got to understand, this is an Enneagram response. She's a self-preservation 9,
uh-huh.
And so she doesn't get excited about things very easily. She's very steady, and she tends to avoid conflict. She's a peacemaker. And so, yeah, she read my book, and she said, like she normally says about most things, oh, that was pretty good. Whereas what I say is, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't take that personally. I just understand that, oh, yeah, that's a frame she uses to perceive her world as one of, just going with the flow and being a conflict avoider. And that's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with my approach either. It's just that they're different, and you can suddenly appreciate the difference as opposed to getting irritated by it.
Yeah, what a really remarkable tool in understanding other people, and you know, really, this could bridge so many gaps that we have in maybe dealing with other people in our relationships.
Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
That's really what it's good for.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with David Banner, author of Frame Shifting, A Path to Wholeness. You can find out more about David through his website, davidkbanner.com.
Ultimately, the main thing it's for is understanding yourself. But you're right. I mean, for relationships, it's terrific because you can suddenly see your boss, for example. Let's say you have an 8 boss, which is the leader, the boss, the protector. These are people that are anger types, and they can just blow up, and then 5 minutes later, they're fine, and everybody else is on the floor. Well, if you understand that that's the frame that your boss is operating from, it doesn't mean you're going to like it, but
uh-huh.
It means, oh, yeah, I get it.
Don't take it personal.
Don't take it personally,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. Don't take it personally, because none of this stuff is personal. It's just a habitual pattern of thought and behavior. That's all these 9 types are. And, you know, you'll always have the type, but what you can do is watch yourself enough to bust yourself when you're doing something like blowing up on people and stop it. You can say, oh, yeah, right, I'm in my 8. I don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas an unconscious 8 just does it throughout their whole life and trashes all their relationships and, you know, it's not very helpful.
Yeah, right. Of course not. So, David, do you think that everyone will eventually have to come to the realization of their ego and of the illusion that they are living in? Do you think that's just a part of who we are and who we are becoming at this point?
You know, I do. And I agree with Eckhart Tolle on this one very strongly, that if we don't do this, then I think the planet is in serious jeopardy because the way we're going right now is clearly self-destructive. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. We just can't go down this path. So The answer is yes. I think that we're going to come, all of us, kicking and screaming sometimes, but all of us are going to come to an awareness of our connection with all of life. Because once you do that, then harming the environment is not an option. I mean, you wouldn't even think about doing that if your consciousness included all living forms as part of your self, big S. So you wouldn't do that. I mean, I've had experiences. I studied shamanism as one of my frame-shifting experiences. I've had experiences walking through the woods where I actually saw the tendrils of light connecting the trees together, and it was just magical. Yeah, and so, you know, how am I going to go through the woods again thinking these are inanimate trees and they're just there for my consumption? And it's just not going to happen. So, yes, I think we are moving toward that. And I would hope quickly.
Yeah, why do you think then that it seems like things are just really hitting, you know, like a critical point, and the level of fear in people's lives is just, I mean, it's escalating, and we don't need to watch more than 5 minutes on the TV to just, you know, get us completely out of sorts. So why do you think that we've hit this critical point?
Because the ego is fighting its death throes. I think the collective ego, see, there's really just one ego, but it looks like there's 6 billion of them, but there's really just one, according to my book, and I believe that to be true. And so it's a last-ditch effort to hold on to power. I mean, we could also talk about the dark side, and some people have a more of a dark focus in life and a more of a destructive ego. And yeah, I think that's probably true, but the ultimate point is, ego is dying, and it doesn't want to die, because when it dies, it sinks life in. But the truth is, all that dies is the ego, which was false anyway, and everything that's not false continues. So look at Eckhart. I mean, the guy's transcended his ego, and he's just happy as a clam. He didn't die as a body. He died as an ego, and this is what needs to happen, in my opinion, is that we have to be willing to die as an ego, because that's what's causing us all our pain.
Good point. It's interesting that, you know, with the fear and the ego hitting a critical mass like that, we're also seeing an incredible amount of information coming out there, like your book, like Tolle's book. There's just a huge amount of information coming out there to uplift people, to get them on their spiritual journey.
Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons for that is I'm on the county board of our little county here, and we're working to stop these big confinement animal operations, which are going to pollute the groundwater. And I'm starting to talk to people, residents that have been here for 40, 50, 60 years, you know, so-called hard rock Republicans, and they're saying, you know, David, I think you're right. We shouldn't be doing this. We're going down the wrong path. And if you look at the national polls, 78% of the people saying the country's moving in the wrong direction. I mean, people are waking up to the limitations of the old paradigm, basically. And I think that's why so many books are coming out now, is because there's hunger to move beyond this limited, fear-based ego, because it's painful. It's painful to be in your ego. I mean, it's not fun. And even people that have what you could call good lives, they also have the restrictions of this limited view of reality that's with them constantly. So, you know, you may be happy for a while, and then whatever it is hits the fan, so forth. So by transcending the ego and just it loses its power, it's not like you have to eliminate it, it sort of goes away, then you can live a life of joy and without worrying about whether you're happy or not. You just in a state of bliss, because you're not being tortured by your mind.
Yeah. So is that where you are on your path right now, David?
I would not say that I am there, but I am certainly way beyond where I was in 1970. I experience a lot of joy in my life. I experience thankfulness for my life every single day. There's nobody now that I'm aware of that I'm holding a grudge against, so I just find forgiveness is way better than trying to make somebody wrong and criticize them and build up a story against them. So, yeah, I would say that I am more than ever before in my life living in this path, but whether I'm, no, I wouldn't say I was fully enlightened. I would never make that claim. But I'm sure having fun.
Yeah, well, good. Hey, there you go. So you have a final chapter in your book that talks about spiritual principles that accelerate growth, and I think that's kind of what we're leading into right now. And so, you know, you talk about different laws like the law of attraction, which we hear so much about right now, but then you have other laws, the law of cause and effect and the law of attention. Can you tell us a little bit about these sort of universal laws and then maybe take a little time to talk about the law of attraction, because it seems like that one law has been sort of thought of as the only law. You know, we're hearing The Secret and
the
all
secret,
of that.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I do think the law of attraction is valid. I do think that we attract to ourselves vibrationally what we think and feel about. People that, I use an example in the book. Diane and I used to live in Chicago in an apartment building, and the woman that owned the apartment building was very fearful, and she had a big Doberman pincher, and she had five locks on her door.
Mm.
And out of the whole building, she got robbed more than anybody.
Oh, God.
True story. I mean, it was kind of humorous.
Wow.
It wasn't to her, but it was to us watching. She was so fixated on what could happen that could hurt her that she inadvertently, like the Bible says, what you fear shall come upon you. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
So if you radiate gratitude, forgiveness, some of these other things that I talk about in this last chapter, staying in the present moment, surrendering, you know, loving what is, all of those things, then what you'll attract in your life are really positive people and positive experiences. Now, that doesn't mean that's all that will happen, because we all are on a karmic path and we've had past lives and all of that stuff. So something could happen that is not very pleasant. You could have a flat tire. You could, you know, break a leg, whatever it is. But there's a way to deal with that without going into resentment and anger. I had an experience, it's probably 20 years ago, where I got hit by a car on the expressway. I'd been pulled over by a policeman, and I don't think I talk about this in the book, but anyway, the cop comes up and says, you know, you were speeding a little bit, slow down, I'm not going to give you a ticket. And I thanked him. So I went back to my car, and as I'm getting back in my car, suddenly, there's this gripping pain on my ankle. I am thrown over the hood of my car, and I land on the pavement looking at my grill of my car. Well, I didn't know what happened, but the cop saw it all. He was still there, and apparently there was a young Greek woman whose car was kind of a clunker, and the hood popped up, and she couldn't see, so she was trying to get off the road, and she got off the road on my ankle. So the ankle was broken in six places.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and I was in a lot of pain, so the cop came up, and he, of course, gave her a ticket, but then he put a blanket on my body so I wouldn't go into shock. And here's where the story gets funny. It was in Chicago, and the ambulance drivers were on strike, so a dog catcher came to pick me up and take me to the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, he didn't have any shocks on the car, so he hit a bump. My leg was throbbing. But the point of the whole story is, you know, I got a cast for my leg, and I went back to work. Now, I could have spent a lot of time blaming that girl because she didn't have a driver's license and she didn't have insurance.
Mm.
And she's 19 years old, and I could have really made a real story about how evil that person was.
Mm.
But that wasn't what it was. What it was is I put myself in position to have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm climbing in my car on a freeway without paying attention. I was thinking ahead to picking up my son and taking him to the doctor, which is where I was going. And so I wasn't in the present moment. And so this thing happened. Okay, fine. So you just deal with it. You say, okay, I'll just get some crutches and I'll go on with my life. Or you can make up a story about how hard done by you are and, you know, how life is cruel and so forth.
And those two are very different energies to hold.
Very different energies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I just had cast for 6 weeks and then my leg's fine and I'm living my life. But we always have those choice points, I think. And we can generate this energy of thankfulness and forgiveness and staying in the present moment, all the things I talk about. And even if something like that happens, it's not going to ruin your day. I mean, you just get your crutches and you go on and do your thing.
Yeah.
So
Great story. Yep, little experience like that, and you can just learn so much from it.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that I had the presence of thought not to go into my victim archetype, as Carolyn Mace would call it,
mm-hmm.
and make up a story about how hard done by I am, because I'm not hard done by.
Right.
You know?
Stuff happens. Life is just part of it. Yes, exactly. I love that you bring up the victim archetype because, in my opinion, that's kind of what's happening right now. We are really we're in a position where we have to look at our victim consciousness and
Absolutely.
Release it, you know. Enough of that.
Yeah, and I think the people that are in charge, without getting conspiratorial here, the elite
yeah.
that are actually running things, not Bush, but the people that are behind Bush.
Behind him. Mm-hmm.
They want to generate this fear. I think
mm-hmm.
9/11 was played right into their hands because if you keep people in fear, you can control them.
Yep.
And that's what's going on. But as people wake up and let go of the fear and let go of the constriction of the ego, then their tactics aren't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But as you pointed out, they're still working because a number of people are still asleep to who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll work out. I'm confident that
It will work out. But you know what? I think that more people are waking up, and maybe that's why we are getting more fear. I mean, you know, these powerful people, you know, are kind of putting more fear out there to maybe control the masses, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're given a lot of opportunity right now to see through all of that.
I think you're totally right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very encouraging.
Yes.
So I'm thrilled that I was asked to write this book by whoever asked me.
I have one more question for you, David,
sure.
regarding the energy drain that it takes to maintain one's ego, because really a lot of people have, you know, fatigue, they're taking, you know, the prescription drug epidemic in this country, you know,
yeah.
the addiction rate, all of this just to kind of get going and get on with the day, you know. So tell us a little bit about the energy it takes to maintain one's ego and its strong grip on its own illusion, and how that contrasts with maybe an increase in energy that one would find living their own true identity.
Boy, you're absolutely right, Juanita. I remember 25 years ago hearing an interview with Swami Satchidananda. I don't know if he's still alive, but he's a very interesting cat. And he said in this interview, I sleep about 3 hours a night.
Mm.
And I remember thinking at the time, wow, that is really cool. I mean, he gets fully rested in 3 hours, where it takes us 8, you know, 7 at least. And I think you nailed it. It takes a lot of energy to hold together this illusory identity that we call the ego. And we're constantly propping it up by our actions, our behavior, our thoughts. And once you get to the point where you're not having to do that anymore, my sense is you get more energy. And I think, for example, Tola and even, you know, Oprah. I really like Oprah because I think she has done a lot of this work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a vibrancy to her that people can sense and feel. And same with Eckhart. And I think anybody who has learned more about who they really are rather than what the ego is telling them are going to have more energy, and it's not going to be this energy drain, because you're absolutely right. The reason why people get tired is they're spending a lot of their psychic energy propping up an identity that isn't true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as long as you keep propping it up, it's going to cost you.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good point. Now, let me ask you, do workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it important to be taking workshops, seminars, to have this frame-shifting experience, or can one just kind of get a book and be on their own? I'm wondering if it's important to, at some point on this path or on this journey, be doing part of it with other people.
Yes, I would say doing it with other people is really helpful.
Mm.
I think you can have experiences just reading books. I did with Ram Dass,
mm-hmm.
you know, 38 years ago. But, yeah, I think workshops can be helpful, seminars. I talk in the book about Avatar. It was a very powerful experience for me. I talk about Est, which mm-hmm. the seminar doesn't exist anymore, but I took it in the 70s. That was very powerful. Yeah, I think these experiences in workshops can be very powerful, and I don't think you have to do that. I think you can have these experiences just living your life if you're willing to take 100% responsibility for your mm-hmm. life and stop playing the victim and start, you know, expressing the truth of who you really are.
Mm.
That's all you really need to do, and then the next step comes. And what I've discovered in my life is that if I'm paying attention, the next thing I'm supposed to do will show up in the form of a person or an event or, you know, a telephone call or whatever it is. Life will say, Dave, over here, buddy. You need to take care of this.
Good point.
I've learned to say, okay.
Yeah, I'm going.
I'm going.
There.
Right.
Well, I wonder if it's a part of just that step from the separation to understanding that we are all connected. You know,
yeah.
If part of that step means that that part of the process has to be done interacting with other people or going through a growth process with other
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely so, yeah. And I believe the task on the planet right now, in my opinion, is community building.
Mm-hmm.
True community building, where we realize our interdependence and we voluntarily look at all of our friends and acquaintances and say, you know, what is it that I need to do to help this person grow or to help this person manifest what their purpose in life is? Or, you know, to become interdependent, truly interdependent, I think is the task right now, because we as these really independent, seeking, capitalistic-oriented folks, and we have been that way for quite a while,
yeah.
tend to drive our cars by ourselves and tend to, you know, live these little cocoon-like lives when, as things start heating up on the planet, which they're doing right now, we're going to need to learn how to trust each other and help each other. And so from my perspective in our little bitty town, what I'm working on is helping connect people. And we just had all these floods in Wisconsin, and
mm-hmm.
people are just coming out of the woodwork helping, and it feels so good to help, and the people that need the help feel so good. And so there's this interplay of energy between the people that so-called were victimized and the other people that are there to help out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what we're doing on the planet right now, is learning how to help each other.
That's exciting. That's so exciting.
It is to me, too.
Yes. David, it's been so great talking to you. I'm just so happy that you came onto the program today.
Well, thank you so much, Juanita.
Yes.
Same here.
Yes, and we definitely encourage people to check out your website, davidkbanner.com, and I know your book can be purchased through your website, as well
yes.
as you have your events and your workshops posted up there. I think you have a blog as well.
I do have a blog, and I'd love for people to sign on and tell me what they think.
Wonderful. Well, we certainly encourage people to do that. I think we have some links up on Inside Scoop Live to take them there as well. So, David, what is your next project? Do you have anything else in the work?
You know, I don't, Juanita. I'm waiting for the inspiration.
Okay, well.
I'm just living my life, and
mm-hmm.
if there's another book, I'll know about it, and if there's a workshop, I'll know about it. But basically what I'm seeking to do is just stay in the present moment, stay grateful, just love my friends and love my family and my kids, and just wait. And if there's something for me to do, I'll know.
Yep, and you'll do it.
I'll
and
do
I
it.
Hope that you keep us posted of that, too.
I sure will.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much, David. And did you have any last final thoughts you wanted to share before we closed up today?
No, I think we've covered a wide range of topics, and
yeah.
I'm just so delighted. I'm delighted in your questions, and I'm delighted in the opportunity to just be here with you and with your listeners. And hopefully people will more and more see that who they are is very large and very magnificent and has really nothing to do with this puny little ego that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. Well, thank you. It's been a wonderful conversation, David. You have a great, great day.
Thank you so much, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, listeners, I have been talking with David Banner. What an interesting conversation today. His book, Frame Shifting, A Path to Wholeness, is available now. It can be purchased through online booksellers as well as locally. I'm sure you can order it through your bookstore. Also, just to mention, the publisher Loving Healing Press, I believe that you can order it directly through them as well. So, thank you once again for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.